Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, D.A., I'm thirsty, man. Can you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, D.A., what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
D.A., what's the dealio? Permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, D.A.? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My co-worker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Man, I'm feeling great.
I'm doing great.
Happy Thursday to you boys and girls. One question only. How do you feel?
Well, I feel good and I'm doing well.
That's all that really matters. And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studios. These are challenging times. Rocket Mortgage, prepared to help. Need mortgage assistance? Contact their team 24/7. RocketMortgage.com. They're home to yours. The team at Rocket Mortgage is with you. Thanks for being with us. It's a Forgotten Classics Day here on the DA Show. Every Thursday, we go back over a game that we should remember, but we don't. Do you remember Corey Brewer's 51-point outburst against the Rockets 6 years ago? Didn't think so. We'll talk to the voice of the Timberwolves, Dave Benz, about the greatest game by far. And maybe the most unpredictable performance in the last decade by an individual NBA player coming up in about 20 minutes from now. Appalachian State announces it is dropping three sports: men's soccer, tennis, and indoor track and field. App State, in response to the financial impact of the pandemic, in an effort to position App State Athletics for future success, their press memo said it's reducing its operating budget, discontinuing men's soccer, men's tennis, men's indoor track and field. The AD, Doug Gillen, talking about how difficult a day this is for the entire App family, but how right now they just simply can't afford to keep these sports going. And this is happening across the NCAA. Schools, organizations, athletic departments deciding what they can cut, because all of this lost revenue goes somewhere in the budget, and it might be reducing staff, reducing professors, reducing this or that, these resources on campus. But for athletics, without the NCAA tournament, there was going to be a punishment for these athletic departments. The NCAA tournament was a bell cow for so many schools, and specifically some of the smaller schools like an App State, that even if you don't make the tournament, being part of a conference that has a bid into the tournament spreads out money. And for the NCAA not to have been paid out by CBS, the hundreds of millions of dollars that comes with each and every NCAA tournament, CBS and Turner pay that out. Without that money, it's been crushing. And that's why you hear so much optimism around college football coming from coaches, ADs, conference commissioners. Even if we can't play all 12, we're going to play 9. If we can't do non-conference games, we're going to play at least our conference games. Even if all of our conference schools can't play, we're going to play our league. We don't need everybody. I mean, whether it was Mike Gundy, Ed Ogeron, James Franklin, Larry Scott, go down the list. The powers that be in college football have all consistently reminded us, don't worry, we'll figure out how to play football. Because if they lose the NCAA tournament and football, forget losing men's soccer. You're talking about losing men football. You're talking about losing sports at that level or entire athletic departments and it being only club sports. Because this is an enormous windfall. So Dennis Dodd wrote this interesting piece to CBS Sports, for CBS Sports, that said this might be the tipping point to a Power Five that breaks away for their own league. He said, a separation of the Power Five from the NCAA has long been possible. Those 65 schools, which include Notre Dame, already exist as separate entities, financially, competitively, even corporately. But with the coronavirus ratcheting up the stakes, a tipping point might be at hand. Vince Thompson, CEO of an Atlanta-based sports and entertainment marketing firm, said, quote, I'm telling you, if you or I were going to place a bet on a stock, double down on the Power Five being a separate entity within 2 years. 2 years. Dodd also quoted a University of Utah economist who said, if there's no NCAA tournament next year, I think there will be a breakaway from this model. And, you know, what you have is haves and have-nots, and the haves are already dealing with their own finances, dealing with budget shortfalls, dealing with creative solutions to difficult financial questions, and they don't want to share the money that they have. They're already sharing it because they're part of the NCAA umbrella. Ohio State's already sharing with Ball State in some way, shape, or form. They don't want to anymore, especially when you're talking about losing money. And look, college might get upended with how we pay, how much we pay, who's on campus, who's not on campus, how classes are run. I mean, that whole thing might end up getting imploded here by what's happening. But the economics of high-end Division I sports have never made sense. Never. They've always been kind of a shell game. LSU insists, well, we don't make any money. There's no profit here. We're a non-for-profit organization. We're an educational operation. And yet they make tens of millions of dollars every single year in profit. But the way that they say, well, we don't take it, we don't pocket it, is they pour it into brand new, high-end, remarkably plush locker rooms, indoor facilities, expansions on stadiums, expanded travel for coaches to recruit, expanded salaries for their staff, expanded staffs. They find every possible way to spend all the money that they make so that they don't come out with a profit at the end of the year. And some of that money goes to funding educational purposes. New wing on the library? Well, you know what? We won a national championship, so we can afford to do that. But it's never made any sense because, of course, schools make tons of money on this. Why else would they invest tons of money in it? Oh, we're a non-for-profit. We broke even last year. Well, then why are you paying your coach $7 million a year? Because you're losing money on the endeavor? Of course not. It's always big business and a big moneymaker to do all these types of things. So, frankly, it's always misleading when they talk about, well, we didn't make money this year. Yeah, sure you didn't. Yeah, right. Okay, sure you did. The Power Five don't want to share, and with this as a tipping point, might have their reason not to share. On top of it, the NCAA looks ridiculous right now. The way the Adidas scandal has unfolded, the way the lack of discipline at UNC unfolded, the fact that we're now going to pay college athletes the Olympic model, so it's all kind of breaking apart, that the NCAA can't afford to pay anybody, can't do that, will never exist, is all breaking apart. And so this is a real possibility that this is what's going to be the reason that we finally have a power league say, okay, we're on our own. We're going to basically make our own rules here. And that's going to also change everything, because then you might have an NCAA tournament that does not have Winthrop, does not have Gonzaga, only has your Power 65. You might end up having a playoff system that does not include UCF, that does not include smaller schools. Now, UCF, if you put the American into the Power Conference, you know, maybe they would be included, but your smaller schools that just might get pushed right to the wayside. No, we're not going to really play with you guys, and we're going to make our own rules. So we can afford to pay our players, or this is what everybody's going to do. So there's not a different schedule for the SEC versus the Pac-12 versus the Big 12 that everybody plays by the same rules. This could end up simplifying a lot of the problems of college football, where you just have two totally different entities fighting over the same sets of rules, but it also might make college athletics suck. It might. I don't know. I mean, I don't think there's any way to really know, but the beauty of the NCAA tournament is the upsets, the Cinderellas. It's not so fun when USC is the Cinderella in the NCAA tournament. It's not really that exciting when Wake Forest is the one we didn't see coming out of nowhere. It's way more fun when it's a small school that you never heard of, like an FGCU, and suddenly they're bouncing all the way to the Elite Eight or the Final Four. That's where the beauty is. In college football, it'll mean less. I mean, I think people like the idea of a group of five making it like a Boise State. I don't know if they ultimately care in college football if those schools really do get their due diligence. But it would make it suck to a certain degree. It would. So this is an interesting piece about this. And Mraz, I can see this. I think it was always going that way, gravitating that way. But now specifically, it feels like the pandemic could put it all into focus and have all the power conferences say, we're losing money anyway. We're certainly not going to float small schools that we have nothing to do with.
It's amazing that we have gotten here over the course of 3 months. Just think about where we were at the canceling of conference tournaments, the canceling of the NCAA tournament, to now where we are spiraling this way. And I do wonder, though, DA, if the power conferences decide to go this way, and this isn't now under NCAA restrictions, does suddenly become the Wild Wild West when it comes to athletes being paid more so than just being paid for their own likeness?
Could.
Like, you know, under that big NCAA hammer, what's the fabrication? Does it suddenly feel like everything's really free agency and everything's out in the open? Now, it might be better for transparency, but yeah, I'm with you. I think maybe using the word will college athletics suck is a little off and a little weird. Now, the NCAA tournament, I absolutely think it will be hurt by this. And also, let's not forget, you know, a school like Villanova in the Big East, that's not one of the Power Five conferences either. So we'd be talking about them out of the NCAA tournament.
What happens to the Mountain West? What happens to the American? What happens to the Big East? Those schools that are just around the Power Five, but not in it.
So do we have suddenly two types of college tournaments, that becomes, I think, watered down on both effects. And I think college basketball, more than any of the other sports, to me, will absolutely suffer. On the football side of things, I don't think things will much suffer. If you get a national champion out of the Power Five conferences and two teams, and the college football playoff all includes that, that's basically what we're doing anyway. Yes, it'd be great for UCFs and Boise States to have their shots. But right now, ultimately, outside of their own conference championships, let's face it, the college football playoff model doesn't allow for them to have a true shot anyway. So I can't fully commit to saying college athletics will suck. College basketball absolutely will suffer and suck.
Specifically, the NCAA tournament. The NCAA tournament would suck. Even college basketball's regular season wouldn't.
Right.
But the NCAA tournament would suck. But everything else, it might end up making way more sense. Because at the end of the day, should Appalachian State be forced to compete against schools that have two or three or five times their budget? You know, Boise State trying to slay the dragon every single year is an unfair fight, because they're being asked to make a playoff system in a league that doesn't have the same notoriety as the SEC, and then ultimately beat teams that have five times their revenue.
Right.
So it would actually make things way more fair if all the schools that competed against one another were operating from the same fiscal stability or foundation.
Right.
It would be hard to ever make it totally equal, because schools within a conference would always, Alabama's always going to make more than Vanderbilt. But look, splitting off the SEC from asking, you know, the Sun Belt teams to compete in that realm, it tends to make a lot of sense. It really does.
One more thing on that, DA, and I just kind of briefly mentioned this with the Wild West and recruiting and money being paid or anything like that. If they do their own thing and they have kind of abandon NCAA rules, which nothing in there says they will, but you have to think there could be something else besides the governing body, just operate the way you want to operate. How many recruits and scholarships are going to be taken from some of those smaller schools who still need to operate in whatever now version of the NCAA they're doing, that maybe they don't get the star player because there's more room on an Alabama, Florida State, or somebody else who now maybe can afford to pay somebody out in the open or something like that? I think the quality of play actually could suffer for the ancillary schools in whatever version of the NCAA they have as well, based on recruiting situations changing.
It's an interesting piece done by Dennis Dodd, CBS Sports. Check it out if you're a college football fan today. When we come back, Forgotten Classics, the day Corey Brewer went off. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Before they were legends.
Brady, wide open, touchdown. Jermaine Wiggins.
Little smoke and mirrors here.
Before a running feed on Twitter.
And that is it. I never thought I would broadcast a game with this many points.
There were games that are only remembered by those who were there.
And there it is, base hit. Back from our Chargers. Here comes Lofton. Here comes the throw. Deep. And Cleveland has won it.
A team coming from a 12-run deficit to win a game.
It's the Forgotten Classics, dusted off the shelves by the DA Show.
Everything he's throwing up is going in tonight.
He should try to kick one in and see if it goes in.
Gorgie Jang ahead to Corey Brewer. He's got a Harden to beat, and Flight 13 clears the tower with the throwdown.
And you finished with 51 points tonight. What got into you?
It was an amazing night for Corey Brewer and the Minnesota Timberwolves in April of 2014, rather. So glad you're with us. Damon Amendolara, DA with you. Joining us for Forgotten Classics this morning is the voice of the Minnesota Timberwolves, Dane, joining us here on the show to talk about one of the great what-ifs, or what happens, is Dave Benz. Dave, good morning.
Good morning, Damon. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
I'm okay. I'm out on the West Coast, so I'm a little early.
This is very early for you. Well, we appreciate you getting up for us. And to give us the preamble to this, it's amazing what Corey Brewer had done in his career. He was a defensive specialist. He had averaged less than 10 points per game for his career. And this was a night where he was going to get no help. Kevin Love and Kevin Martin were out for this game. It's a late season game, April game, against the Houston Rockets. Do you remember your expectations going into calling that game?
I mean, the Timberwolves going into that game were an even 539-39, and I believe, if memory serves, that was the year that Phoenix had, I believe, a 46-win team and didn't make the playoffs. So I think the Timberwolves were already out of it because the West was just so ridiculous at that point. And it was Rick Adelman's final season coaching the Timberwolves, and the background to all that was Rick's wife had some medical issues, so Rick was having to have his attention diverted. So it was really an interesting season. The team had been beleaguered by injuries. You mentioned that Kevin Love was out for that game, as well as Kevin Martin. Nikola Pekovic was out. There were so many games that season that the Timberwolves just, you know, they had to go to the court with so many other guys that were important to them in street clothes every single night. Or you think that maybe that Rick Adelman team might have had a chance to get into the playoffs. But my expectations for that night were, you know, the Timberwolves would go out and give it their best shot against the Rockets team that was trying to improve their playoff seeding. But more than likely, it was going to be not a happy night for the Timberwolves. And Corey Brewer had other ideas. I mean, it was just, like you said, his career numbers were not great. I believe he was averaging about 11.5 points per game that season going into the game. To think that he could put up 51, anybody who walked into the building, if you had said before the game, Corey's going to get 50-plus tonight, it would have laughed in your face. So it was just one of those kind of nights. It was a magical night that, that's why I guess you're dusting it off as a forgotten classic, because the game, a lot of people outside of Timberwolves, the Timberwolves fan base, probably rolled their eyes to even think Corey Brewer had a 51-point game. Yeah, Corey Brewer had a 51-point game. It happened.
No doubt. Exactly right. And if you Google the Corey Brewer game, it comes up as this game because obviously it is kind of known in NBA lore as such. That season, he played 53 games. He played 81 games, and 53 of them scored less than 15 points. He only scored 20 or more 6 times. So scoring 51 was unheard of, as you mentioned. What time in the game were you finally like, wow, Corey Brewer's kind of going off in this game. We got something different here from Brewer.
I don't remember if it was, I believe it was halftime, but it might have been the end of the first quarter. Corey put one in from midcourt. And it was to beat the clock at the end of one of the quarters. And it just, at that point, you were just like, wow, this is really kind of crazy. He finished 2 of 6 from 3-point range, but the box score doesn't say that one of the two was, from about 46 feet away. So, and it was just ridiculous. Anything that he was putting up was going in. And so they just kept giving him the ball, and he was, and the shots were not textbook shots. They were awkward shots that he was just throwing up, and everything was just falling. So, at some point then you start to realize like, okay, this guy's just got an amazing night. Everything he's putting up is dropping. And you played the clip before we came on. My broadcast partner, Jim Peterson, and I marveling like, maybe he should try kicking one in. Because, it was like just the guy could not miss. And, the other thing, though, that I'll remember most about that game, I remember Corey hitting the midcourt shot. I remember him getting to the 50 and 51-point mark from the free throw line. And then the game coming down to the final shot. And Gorgie Jang hits a shot to win the game in the final seconds off a feed from Ricky Rubio. So it was just a great late season night for the Timberwolves and for their fan base, in a season that was otherwise frustrating because of all the injuries.
Dave Benz joins us, voice of the T-Wolves, on the night that Corey Brewer went for 51 points. As you mentioned, they needed all of those 51 as the T-Wolves win 112-110 over the Rockets. How much of this night was about Brewer couldn't miss versus a Rockets team that, as we know, likes to run and gun, doesn't play a ton of defense, and gave him some open space to allow this to happen?
I think that there's some truth to that. I mean, Kevin McHale was still coaching the Rockets at that point. This wasn't the Mike D'Antoni high-flying, high-offense Rockets that, we're used to now. I think that at that point, Gerson Rosas, who's now the president of basketball ops for the Timberwolves, was, one of the driving forces in the front office for the Rockets, and they were starting to implement this idea about the threes and the layups and the free throws being the way to score points. And I believe it was this season that the Rio Grande Valley Vipers, that their shot chart, you know, kind of had changed everything, and it became the model for what the Rockets eventually became. But, you know, I think Kevin McHale's philosophy on the bench was, you know, okay, yeah, Corey Brewer's hot, but how long can he keep it going? You know, so it's not like they didn't try to defend Corey Brewer. And, you know, he certainly, like I said, hit a lot of shots that were unorthodox. But I also think that there was, you know, a part of disbelief, not only on Kevin McHale's mind, but probably in the minds of James Harden and the rest of the Rockets, that, you know, there's no way this guy can keep this going. You know, just like, you know, if he's gonna beat us, we'll lose to the Timberwolves if Corey Brewer is gonna beat us. And it's one of those nights where, yeah, Corey Brewer beat you.
Amazing. Ricky Rubio said after the game, "I want to watch it again to see if he really scored 51." Rick Adelman said, "They didn't know what to do with him. We didn't know what to do with him either." And then LeBron after the game was told Corey Brewer went for 51 points, and he said, "Wait, who is that?" So that's how unpredictable this whole night was from Brewer. Do you remember the reactions of his teammates as he's surging past the 35-point mark, the 40-point mark, and then finally getting 51?
I mean, just everybody on the bench was thrilled for him because, you know, Corey, if you want to talk about the all-time great guys, all-time most liked guys in the Timberwolves franchise history, Corey is definitely on the Mount Rushmore of that group. The fan base just adored Corey Brewer. His teammates adored him. He was just a really, really effervescent personality that was, he was so charismatic and so well-liked. So everybody was thrilled to see him having this huge night and etching himself into the Timberwolves record book, because at that point it tied the franchise record for the most points in a single game. It was eventually eclipsed by Mo Williams, of all people,
wow,
in a game in Indiana. And then it was finally eclipsed by Carl Anthony Towns, who, you know, kind of seems like a more normal name to have atop that list. But, yeah, to have Corey Brewer and Mo Williams have two of your top three all-time scoring nights alongside Kevin Love had a 51-point game, that was you know, that was kind of a really unusual list for the Timberwolves for their top single performances in franchise history. But everybody was thrilled, man. Corey was, you know, and the Corey ended every interview that he did while he was wearing a Timberwolves uniform by just, you know, looking into the camera real quick and yelling, "Go Wolves!" And just that little thing, fans loved him for that. And just a really good guy. And everybody was thrilled to see him have his moment.
That's amazing. I don't think a lot of people realize that. So Corey Brewer on the Mount Rushmore of Timberwolves good guys ever. That's how beloved he is within the franchise and from the fans.
Absolutely. Especially he was there twice, you know. He was there and then he left and he went to Dallas and was part of that championship team in Dallas, got a ring with the Mavericks, and then eventually played in Houston and then came back to the Timberwolves. So, you know, it was and then he bounced around a little bit after his time in Minnesota, but he has two tours of duty in Minnesota, and you know, he certainly was one of the, you know, when he came back to Minnesota as well, he was genuinely excited about being back. You know, it wasn't a faux excitement that he put up like being back in Minnesota. The guy loved being in Minneapolis, and it definitely showed, and fans recognized that, and you know, that made him even that much more beloved.
And there was no personal motivation or vendetta that night. It just kind of all came together. There wasn't a reason that night stuck out for Corey Brewer's purposes or effort purposes, right?
No. It was just the stars aligning. I don't think there was any story behind it that he, you know, wanted to go light up, you know, James Harden or anything. That would be a great backstory. But no, I think it was just the stars aligning and Corey having one of those nights.
Dave Benz, voice of the Timberwolves, on the night that Corey Brewer went for 51 points, joining us. Before we let you go, Dave, what do you think about the return of the NBA going Disney only? What do you think about that plan?
I mean, you know, whatever the league decides, I'm confident that Adam Silver is looking into this with every possible angle being considered, and he's got one of the best staffs, not just in all sports, but out of any business entity, I think, in the United States at his disposal. You know, the medical staffs of the teams individually are just fantastic across the league. I know Robbie Sika, who's one of the lead guys as far as the NBA is concerned on the forefront of how they've been addressing this pandemic. With the he's with the Timberwolves medical staff, and Robbie has been, you know, front and center on this thing all along. You know, they just have really a great knowledge base to work from. So whatever they decide, I'm confident that they're going to figure out a way to be able to do it in a way that is safe for everybody. But the question then becomes, you know, how many teams are going to go? What's it going to look like? I don't know any of the answers to that. I know that there's a couple of conference calls that are going to be going on with the commissioner's office and some of the higher level people in the league, as well as the owners, in the next couple of days. And they're going to come to some kind of resolution on this. So personally, I'm hoping that it involves all 30 teams because, you know, the Timberwolves still have a lot. They don't have a lot to play for in terms of being able to get into the postseason, but they were the most active team in the league at the trade deadline. And I believe they only got to play 18 games together after they made their moves. So it would be nice to see them get a few more games back to kind of see what they've got after their trade and see how those pieces fit together a little bit better. So, you know, I'd like to see all 30 teams come back. Does that make the most sense from a safety standpoint when you're trying to contain numbers and you know, trying to make sure everyone's safe? I just know that I'm glad I don't have to make those decisions, but I would certainly revel in the opportunity to still call a few more games from this season, which got halted, unfortunately, as we all know, far too quickly.
Voice of the Wolves, Dave Benz, joining us this morning on the show. Dave, great stuff this morning. Thanks so much for going down memory lane with us about the Corey Brewer 51-point game. I appreciate it. Hopefully we do get to see you back on the sidelines and courtside calling these games.
Yeah, hopefully sooner rather than later. So, Damon, I appreciate you having me on, though, and look forward to NBA basketball being back soon in some form.
My pleasure. You too. Thanks for getting out with us, Dave.
No problem. Take care.
Dave Benz joining us on Forgotten Classics. Corey Brewer, defensive specialist, averaged less than 10 points per game for his career on the night in 2014 that he went for 51. We do it every Thursday here on the DA Show. Andrew Bogus is standing by. He has our final headlines of the morning. Bogues, good morning.
Hey, boys. DA, these ones are sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Progressive Insurance presents Shower Sessions. Half interview, half concert, all from the shower. Watch new music videos and exclusive interviews now at youtube.com/progressive. Nationals righty Max Scherzer, one of eight players on the union's powerful executive subcommittee. Scherzer tweeted last night, "Players are done talking with owners about more salary reductions." Scherzer's post also included a somewhat veiled threat, quote, "MLB's economic strategy would completely change if all documentation were to become public information." Now, on a little more serious note and an official note, the union expected to submit its own payroll proposal by the end of this week. They'll offer to play over 100 games instead of 82 at prorated salaries. Owners, though, don't want to play a longer season because that would mean a later postseason, which could be affected by a coronavirus reemergence in the fall or winter that many expect. Now, part of restarting the NBA season is getting international players back into the U.S. The league reportedly has permission for those players to come back even if they're in countries under travel restrictions. The Timberwolves are opening their building today for voluntary individual workouts, which remain the only thing the NBA is allowing right now, but that could change when owners meet tomorrow. The Sixers actually practice in Camden, New Jersey, so they liked hearing earlier this week that the Garden State was open for teams to practice at their buildings. Governor Phil Murphy told our friends Moose and Maggie yesterday the Garden State trending towards the Giants and the Jets starting their seasons on time at MetLife Stadium.
This assumes, Maggie, that the metrics are continuing to go. To your earlier question, you know, we, God willing, we don't have to pull the emergency brake, that this continues going in the right direction.
Now, before we leave Moose and Maggie, if anybody wants to stop me here, you can, but there is video floating around now, the interweb, of our good buddy Moose during this conversation with Governor Murphy, maybe nodding off for a brief instant. The history of WFAN host falling asleep on the air is well known. And it looks like maybe possibly our buddy Moose is the latest victim.
There's two things. Number one, I want to believe that he fell asleep. I don't know. I think he has such a big head, Moose, that there's this nod-off moment on the video, and it's at MNMWFAN, where it's like his hand collapses because his head's so heavy. But the other point here is, if he did fall asleep, our own Wizard of Watch DA, Andrew Kaplan, is also the Wizard of Watch M&M, not M&M's, M&M, and apparently now would have sabotaged Moose, because this is the only reason this video becomes available, is because Kaplan has put it out there, and I must ask, did Kaplan throw him under the bus?
Look, this is the end-all be-all about this clip, okay? Number one, Cap, you don't dare ever question the integrity of Andrew Kaplan, okay? Ever. He's got one responsibility, and that is to keep those damn cameras rolling at all points in time, so that if there is a viral clip, it is caught. He did his job here, okay? Number two, Moose is saddled with three screaming kids every single day. He's not getting much sleep. The guy is waking up. He's dealing with the crazy family. We've already seen video clips of him looking like he's got just a crazy army of hellions running around his house. The man is he is wiped out, okay? He's out. But I can tell you, that is not sleeping, okay? I know sleeping. I've seen a host sleep. A sleeping on the air is you are bored, you nod off, you close your eyes, and then you quickly, suddenly wake up like a deer in headlights. Oh my God, what did I do? Because when you fall asleep, you lose consciousness, and then you don't have any idea how long you were asleep for. Moose does not do that here. He leans his big moose head on his fist, those big meat hooks, okay? And he slides the face up the wrist. It is more of a nose scratch by the back of the hand than it is falling asleep, and he never loses consciousness to where he wakes up and goes, oh my God, where am I? So he never actually falls asleep. Is he exhausted? Absolutely. Can you see him largely bored by the interview? No question about it. But is that sleeping? That is not sleeping. That is close, but it's not sleeping.
I will agree, and just I will end on this note. One thing that should be noted, and Cap, I think Cap does a great job, but since the return of Moose and Maggie on camera, thanks to Andrew Kaplan, I follow them, and if you follow Moose or anybody on Twitter, Moose now, for whatever reason, with these glasses he has, is morphing in quarantine to a pseudo Elton John. Moose is starting to look like an old fat Elton, and I don't know if that's good or bad. And maybe
he's doing
that
the show
to
from a piano.
Right, how tired he looks. But with the glasses that Moose is now wearing in a lot of these clips, he is starting to look like a fat Elton John.
You know, I like
how you have to qualify that. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I don't think it's a good thing.
Well, I mean, some people
I don't think anybody goes, you know what Moose really needs? To look like a fat Elton John. That would really help out his look.
I do, though, want to do a scientific study on Moose's fatigue level right now, because, yes,
yeah,
those three kids, and I met them, they are super cute and super sweet, but they are insane. However, before quarantine and before we sat here from 6 to 10 a.m., Moose did a radio show with Sean's good buddy Taz from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m., would drive back home to Connecticut, do whatever he had to do, then drive back into Manhattan, was on local TV in New York sometimes until 10, 11, 12 at night, would drive back to Connecticut, take a nap, then drive back to do this radio show with Taz. They were, I don't know how Moose lived during that, I don't know, two-year window. He actually might be more refreshed now at home in quarantine, even with those kids, because he's in one place. He's not crisscrossing the tri-state area, driving hundreds of miles a day. So I don't know that he actually is more tired now than he used to be.
I think that's fair. I would say this would have been much more likely that Moose fell asleep if this was a year ago in this time slot. I think right
yes.
now it's more unlikely it was actually falling asleep. And you know what? I kind of like it because it kind of looks like a real Moose kind of grazing his head down just a little bit. You know, swinging his head down, smelling the grass.
Real quick, finish your headlines. NFL owners voting today on rule changes for the coming season. No longer under consideration is either proposal about a sky judge. And before voting on it, the onside kick alternative has been tweaked. It would be an untimed down. It could only be used during regulation, and it could only be used twice in a game. J.J. Watt's contract no longer includes any guaranteed money, which means it'd be easier for the Texans to get rid of him if they wanted, which they don't. Watt says he isn't looking for any renegotiations. He's due $15.5 million for the coming season, then $17.5 million in 2021. And again, none of that is guaranteed. And last night's NASCAR Cup Series race in Charlotte rained out. New start time is 7 Eastern tonight. DA, back to you.
Thank you, Bogues. When we come back, advanced analytics behind Mraz's flag football career and your epic fail. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
No one knows what analytics is. They think it's like a bunch of nerds doing math, which I don't know. Maybe that's what it is.
It's time now for the Mothership's Advanced Analytics.
One of my favorite advanced analytics ever. Should Mraz's flag football team adopt an old school ground and pound offense?
Hard hitting topic.
On Twitter, 72% said yes. Mraz's flag football team, the Young Guns, should go back to an old-school offense. On Facebook, also, the predominant answer is yes, 67%. Here are the advanced analytics behind Mraz's career. He claims to have scored 26 touchdowns in 34 seasons. That would be two half seasons every calendar year. So that would be two touchdowns a season for 17 seasons. In his last year at tight end, he caught a career-low 6 passes for 0 touchdowns. Which is why the team wants to go away from Mraz as a pass-catching tight end and make him more of a blocker at center and then let other guys run downfield. They have said that the game has passed Mraz by. Mraz says, let's bring it back to ground and pound. We want to go old school here. Pound the rock like Rex Ryan of the Jets or John Gruden wanted to bring back football from the 90s. Also, according to Mraz Advanced Analytics, he has caught more passes since the day Mr. Six ripped his Achilles, then Mr. Six. So it's an important line of demarcation in flag football world on Long Island. Time now for your epic fail. Mraz attempts to defend, thinking Jacksonville was named after the Jackson 5.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
The Michael Jackson Jackson 5 thing, it needs to be reiterated because I feel like for whatever reason over the years this continues to be lost in translation. I didn't realize Montana bordered Canada. Uh-huh. The story we did on the show was Michael Jackson's elephant escaped the Jacksonville Zoo. Uh-huh. This isn't, I didn't just come in and go, oh, Jacksonville, though. Jackson 5 lived there. No. And I thought out loud, what are the odds of that? That of all the zoos and cities in America, that Michael Jackson's elephant escaped the Jacksonville Zoo, which made me think, is there a tie-in between Michael Jackson and his family and a town named Jacksonville?
Where there is love, I'll be there. I'll be there.
It all started with the elephant, D.A. The elephant needs to be told when telling the history of why I thought Jacksonville was named after the Jackson 5.
Okay, that...
Because I think in context, people might go, well, that is kind of ironic. I don't blame them. Then what the heck's a Trojan if it's not a condom?
I think one point against you, though, is that the naming of Jacksonville, I think everybody roundly knows, would have happened well before the fame of the Jackson 5.
I'll reach out my hand to you.
Again, I understand that it's wrong, so in hindsight, it's funny to laugh. But it's not as if, D.A., we were sitting in 11th grade American history and somebody ever mentioned when Jacksonville
was invented. How many towns do you think got their name in the 1960s?
I liked Michelangelo.
I mean, you see street names change all the time for athletes and stuff.
Well, that's a little different than town names.
But, D.A., can you at least admit this? The irony and the odds that of all the zoos for Michael Jackson's elephant to end up in Jacksonville, doesn't that at least raise an eyebrow and it requires some thought?
Call my name, and I'll be there.
I think the obvious answer is, well, no.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
Our toll-free line sponsored by Geico. Geico has introduced the Geico Give Back 15% credit car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers that last your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for info and eligibility. C2 tweets, 51 points from Corey Brewer's nice, but I'll forever remember him as the 11,000-step travel on a fast break. Alien OG tweets, you can run from a bear as long as you're faster than the other people you're with. Mr. Fahrenheit tweets, the Michael Jacksonville Zoogate denial by Mraz, similar to Jordan denying that he did not have anything to do with Isaiah Thomas being left off the Dream Team. Also early, Ask the Pros for tomorrow, was Gary Musk born in Gary, Indiana, or Jacksonville, Florida? Thanks to Sean Mraz, executive producer. Thanks to Pete the Body Bilotti on the Wheels of Steel and musical director, audio director. Thanks to Andrew Kaplan, the Wizard of Watch DA. Thanks to Andrew Bogish on your headlines. We'll see you tomorrow for a Target Demo Friday. The Mothership disconnects.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.